Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to Game of Thrones 2 Electric Boogaloo. I'm your host, Anthony. This week we cover the long-awaited chapter of Dany's visionary experience in the House of the Undying. And I knew that in order to do justice to this chapter, I needed a robust and vociferous fan roundtable. So with me today are Ray and Ken and my arch-nemesis, Melanie the Blood Mage. After my conversation with the gang, I include a short excerpt of my conversation with Dr. Podrick McCarran. All right, without further ado, here is Melanie, Ray, and Ken.
Listen, we don't want a sheep stealer. We're good.
You just wait. Sheep stealer rookie of the year. So relative to the House of the Undying prophecy, I feel like for some fans, this really is energizing. It's really within their wheelhouse. And for others, it's just simply exhausting. And I feel like I'm a little bit exhausted by this chapter. What about you, Ray? What do you think about this one?
This is tinfoil hat. This is what I love about this book. This is my alley. This is a strike right down the middle.
Melanie?
Oh, this is one of my favorite chapters in the whole book.
How about you, Ken?
Yeah, I could not be more enthused for this chapter. I told a couple of friends that I was reviewing a chapter, and they said, which one? And I said, the one where Daenerys goes in the House of the Undying. Oh, no way, that's the best. Yeah.
Did you only ask us for a question observation from non-House of the Undying part because you want to stump for Miri Mazdur again? Because should they mention her before they go in?
That's funny. So what I've done, because I know that this segment is going to include a lot of sick burns by my arch nemesis, is that I brought in a little bit of sound effects. So every time I get burned by Melanie, there will be a sound effect. And the sicker the burn, the more ferocious the roar.
All right.
So we'll see how this goes.
Pressure's on.
All right. I'm going to read my synopsis. As Dany approaches the House of the Undying Ones, the men in her life protest. Ago, Rakaro, and Jogo distrust magic. Jorah asks to accompany her. Zaro asks her to leave the Palace of Dust behind and come to his pleasure barge. Wink, wink. Dany ignores them and is guided by Prat Pree to the entrance with only baby Drogon to protect her. She is instructed that once inside the House of the Undying Ones, she should only ever take the first door on the right and only ever go up. She drinks a concoction held on a silver platter by a little pink man and enters. Each room she passes is framed by a door, and some contain scenes from historical events relative to Westerosi's recent past. Some rooms contain scenes that never come to pass. Some scenes are very personal to her. She is tempted to leave the path a number of times, but eventually she enters a room with a stone table and a throbbing but decaying heart hovering above it. Around the table sit bluish shadow people. She is given something that sounds like a prophecy, but is attacked by the shadows until Drogon breathes fire and burns them and the room. Dany exits to find Prat Pree gibbering and hopping. The warlock dances toward her with a knife, but the men of her retinue save her.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, before we go into the House of the Undying, let me just repeat a few of the adjectives used of the exterior. And maybe the House of the Undying Ones is an allusion to the Deep Ones. We'll see. Okay, so here's how it's described. Ancient, coiled, black, fallen, broken, evil, drinks in the morning sun. Not made of mortal men. So I'm wondering whether the House of the Undying Ones is one of these prehistory architectural wonders that we find elsewhere in more ancient parts of Westeros and Essos.
No. Just no.
No pots, none of this.
This I won't.
I think it is, and I'll tell you why. When she's leaving, she's going through a hallway, and it's described as serpentine. And not all, but sometimes that is how this inky black stone is described. And so I think that there's something about the black tiles on the exterior that is supposed to be reminiscent of the oily tiles of these other architectural wonders.
Mm.
Also, not made by mortals caught my attention.
Well, it could be that, like, there is only one sort of true religion in Westeros, right? And then everyone is just interpreting it differently. And that's why you see the same sort of symbologies and architecture across different religions. Who knows?
I think I could get on board with that if we, instead of talking about religion, one universal religion, we were talking about sort of an ancient prehistory mythology.
Yeah.
That is then adapted variously in various stories.
Yeah, so what I'm thinking about is, like, there are, Westeros has a creator, right? Or has, like, a myth, like you said, a mythology.
Yeah.
And it is something. However, the different regions and the different people interpret all of it differently, depending on, like, what they discovered or what they found, or but it's actually, that's why you can, like, see the similarities between them.
Your observation or your theory is interesting to me, but it is a little bit contradictory to my observation.
Oh, good.
Which was on the same topic, but just the House of the Undying seems to me, other than maybe the references about the serpentine and the tiles, but there's a lot of references to, like, trees or, like, wood products,
mm-hmm,
throughout. So, you know, you've got the black barked trees with the inky blue leaves that are outside the door to the wizards. And I'm jumping a little bit, but that's made of weirwood and ebony trees. Drogon ends up biting the wooden door. and then how the Undying are described at the end. There's a lot of wood and burning references.
Yeah, I attributed all of that to her visionary experience, because those are clearly the doors at the House of Black and White, the ebony and weirwood doors, which okay. I think Danny okay. is hallucinating. But I mean, I'm not saying that there's no wood incorporated into this architecture. The entire building isn't necessarily made of the black stone, but interesting that the bark of the trees is black and inky, suggesting that maybe there's something about what the architecture has done to the soil, but perhaps I'm barking up the wrong tree.
Oh, see, now you're helping me out there too with the mm-hmm. tree reference. And to keep going too, like there's two references to tendrils, right?
Yep,
which can be like right. tree or plant products, where one, the nightshade goes into her like tendrils. And then at the very end, the smoke is escaping the House of the Undying, like tendrils through.
Or they could be parts of
or they could be deep ones and squids.
Yep. Squid-like
oh,
tendrils.
It's the Kraken. Yeah,
it's the deep ones. Double oh, bird. God.
Ridiculousness.
Can we at least agree that this dude standing in front of the mouth door is a full-on Oompa Loompa?
Is he orange?
He is pink.
Yeah, I don't know. They need to be orange. Unless, do they show, I wonder, did they have they were all male in the old movie. So maybe female Oompa Loompas are pink. We don't know.
To take that one step further, when I was reading that in the description of kind of the oval door in which they entered, I actually thought of maybe like a Hobbit reference. Mm. And this was like a Tolkien. So you've got like a small figure standing by a big oval hole, kind of like Bag End.
Oh, yeah, with the door, with the knob right in the middle.
It's a little bit of a stretch, but...
He doesn't even come up to her knee.
Yep.
Aw, that's cute. Oh.
It's mushroom.
It's mushroom.
It's mushroom. Mushroom got a job. It's the House of the Undying.
Yeah, it's okay.
All right. Are you guys ready to talk about some visionary experience here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Finally.
Okay. So let's talk about the first room. The first room is the woman who's being ravaged by the four little Oompa Loompas. Mm-hmm. Same creatures we met at the front door, right?
Yeah.
I have a thought about this and the symbolism here, but let me throw it to you first. What do you all think about this first image?
I figured this was like this is the Clash of Kings, right? Like this is Westeros being savaged by all the kings that are raping it. Well, I think, yeah, the four. Yeah, so like you got Balon and Rob and... Stannis,
Joffrey,
and Joffrey, yeah, because mm-hmm. Yeah, because Renly's dead already, so there's only four left.
I mean, that's the only thing I've ever read that makes this make any kind of sense, other than George just being a sick weirdo, which is all possible. I mean, he mentions. He's like, this booby is perfect. This booby is disgusting. Later mm-hmm. in the chapter, so it's also possible.
It's actually possible. It's most likely that that's what it is, and he's just like perverted and disgusting, and people are just like coming up with stuff to like make it, you know.
It's like, that's better than what I was doing.
Yeah,
I was thinking. I don't disagree with you, Ray, with that with the analogy, but I was thinking, could this be a like a foreshadowing for how the Undying are kind of ravaging her? And the number four is very specific, but you know, some of the same language about how they're kind of attacking her breast and like going after her. Then the Undying are kind of doing the same thing at the end, like one's like trying to bite her eyeball, and like, so I don't know if that's foreshadowing if she was the beautiful woman who's about to be savaged.
That was my reading. I was thinking like this is exactly what's going to happen to her in the last room. So the first room and the last room yeah. are kind of bookends for her experience. And because she doesn't heed this warning and walks on by the room, then now she's going to basically become that woman. Because, like you say, a lot of parallel language there.
Yep.
All right. Do you guys want to talk about the first room anymore?
No, this
one's
weird.
The first room
is kind of boring.
The first room is boring and creepy, and I'm ready to go to the second
one. Low-key, this is a pretty gross chapter. But I thought the next room was kind of boring, in retrospect.
Oh, it broke my heart in retrospect. The first time I read this after finishing the books, I was like, no.
Yeah.
Sad face.
Yeah.
I thought it was victorious wolf head, not a literal wolf head.
It's a dead king with the head of a wolf, but the king's eyes follow her. Pretty clear this is the Red Wedding.
It's pretty clear.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish we got a vision of that in the show in season two. I feel like
they never would have included that.
Yeah, I feel like the visions we got in the show were so tempered back because they didn't want to, like, spoil anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was the first time that I was actually like, what the fuck, show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was truly disappointed with the show.
Yeah, well, good thing for me, I didn't, I watched the show before I read the books, so I didn't get that in the first, I didn't get any what the fuck moments in the first four seasons. I was just like, I was just in love with it all.
I watched the first season, then read them, then, so Karth was the first time on the show that I was like, the fuck was that?
A lot of those moments.
Yeah.
Marie,
yeah. That,
I was like,
a lot of the Essos plot is kind of like gone.
Let me ask about the last sentence there, Anthony, of that paragraph. And it said, it's talking about the, you know, who we're appearing to be, Robb Stark. It says, and his eyes followed Dany with mute appeal. That kind of took me, because I was like, what is, you know, you're kind of watching somebody's eyes and they're kind of acknowledging you or they're interested in you. Like, what does mute appeal mean?
Does anyone else have any thoughts on this?
I think the appeal is he's trying to ask her for help, but he's mute because he's dead and there's a wolf head on him, but he needs help.
Yeah.
So somehow this corpse of Robb Stark is like asking Dany for help.
Yeah. Help me destroy my enemies.
I was thinking that it was more like he's interested in her, but the interest is muted. Like, he's interested enough to watch her, but he's not all that impressed with her.
Okay.
Of course, that's how you would interpret it. Because you're not all that
Sick
impressed.
Drakkaris.
Next room, she sees the house with the red door from her youth, and it's got a lemon tree, and our best guess is this is Braavos, but there are some who doubt this. Maybe this is Dorne, maybe not, it's not Braavos, because let's overinterpret a lemon tree.
Yeah. You're getting into Lemon Gate?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... I don't know how much can you infer from a lemon tree. This is a rich guy. Maybe he just likes lemons. He had a.
I mean, being that this is
sapling imported.
This is House of the Dragon. We did get the lemon tree reference in the show.
Who knows?
We did with Larys pointing out that whatever flower was in the King's Landing was thriving.
What a romantic! I mean, Larys is.
Oh, Larry.
Larys just has an eye for beauty.
There were lemon painted all in that courtyard. So it was like people were saying that it was Ryan Condal telling everyone, dude, she was in Braavos.
Yeah.
All right, next room. So the next room has a man on a highly exalted throne, and he's talking to a man down below the throne, and he says the words, let him, be the King of Ashes. I think we're supposed to think that this is the Mad King.
Her father.
Pretty sure we know this is the Mad King based on what Jaime says later in the series.
Yeah, when he's in the tub.
It's burning them barbed all. Because it's literally barbed, the throne. It's the Iron Throne.
Yeah. Yeah, this is answered by Jaime in the tub with Brienne.
So I do want to throw in a little bit of a caveat here and say that George likes history to repeat itself. So it's good to be reminded that there's this long history of Targaryen kings, and it's possible that more than one of those kings said the same phrase.
Sure.
Are you alluding to this being Dany? Because she's not an old man with dark eyes and long silver gray hair.
I do not think that Dany will ever sit the Iron Throne. So
or be an old man.
That this is
she's not going to be an old man.
Yeah, that too.
So you're thinking it could have been a king, a past Targaryen before Aerys.
I don't have an alternative theory. I'm not certain about this. My best guess would be the Mad King, but I just want to say that I don't feel the certainty that people do when they are reading this chapter.
This is one of the visions that was shown in the show, with the Mad, like the Mad King was shown. With this vision.
That was a brand vision, though.
No, that was that wasn't in this one? When he's like, burn them all.
No, I just watched it. She sees the throne room. It's only two things that she sees when she goes into the house and the Undying. It's the throne room with the snow / air quotes ash, because ash doesn't melt in your hair. And then she goes outside and it's like the wall, and then she goes to the tent and it's Drogo, and then she comes back and she roasts.
So am I confusing visions?
Yeah, you see this in something Bran sees when he works with a tree.
But there is something where you see the Mad King saying, burn them all.
But yes, but in the, there's never been, other than Robert Baratheon, a situation where the Targaryen on the throne would have been close enough to being overthrown that they would have been saying anything like this. Like, there are the Blackfyre rebellions, but those were largely just squashed. And I don't know I don't know why, you know, the only other
is in Fire and
House
Blood.
Of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon.
But
yeah, maybe that's Aegon.
How many Targaryen kings actually get to be old men?
Yeah.
But I do want to point out, Anthony, that Drogon, the dragon that you hate dragons and you don't think that they're super cool for some reason, it does not like what he's seeing in this room. He's not like, ooh, yeah, let's burn everything, girl. He shrieks and his claws digging through silk and skin. And he tries to get her to move on, and she does. Mm. He doesn't like it. He wants no part of that.
Drogon is heroic in this chapter. I am happy to admit that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't think he's evil for eating the disgusting heart and saving his mommy?
You have to remember that this is baby Drogon. Baby Drogon is innocent, and it's probably best to choke him out in his crib so he doesn't become a mass murderer.
Dracarys.
Okay, the next room.
Sorry, before we move on to that, can I ask one more thing? The person that this king is talking to, we presume that it's Jaime Lannister. And could this be something of foreshadowing in a later book that's not written, with an encounter with Daenerys and Jaime, where Jaime is trying to have some redemption about what happened by killing her father?
Mm.
And so he then describes what happened. And then Daenerys is like, oh, I actually kind of believe you because I had this vision in the House of the Undying where what you're saying actually played out.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh. Yeah, if he goes into some self-defense where he's going on about there's too many vows, which vows am I supposed to adhere to? And then he like describes a scene. Danny could be in a position to say, oh, that reminds me of something I saw in the House of the Undying.
Do we have an example of a character coming up with something that she ties back to the House of the Undying? Does that ever happen?
Yeah, the very next chapter, she's thinking Piat Pri betrayed me, and then she thinks it over and she thinks, yeah, but it wasn't for money or love. Well, and so then she kind of dismisses it.
Yeah, yeah, but that's of the three that's at the end, right? Like the for love, for treason. Yeah. I'm talking about like has anyone done something that referenced a vision that she had in the House of the Undying?
So we're about to get to one here.
Well, she literally lives like the Misa part later on.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yep.
Like you're that's right. Exactly what happens.
Yeah. She doesn't wait till the next room, but there's another vision that comes true also.
Okay, next room. So there's a man with hair like her brother, but she realizes that it's not the brother that she knows. It's not Viserys. And he's talking with a woman who is suckling a babe at her breast. And she asks him what the name should be. And he says, Aegon. Why not Aegon? It's the name fit for a king. And then she says, how about a song? How about a song for this young lad? And dude says, he already has a song. It's the Song of Ice and Fire. And so most fans are pretty confident that this is, what's the dude's name? Lyanna's lover?
Rhaegar? Jesus Christ, you host a book podcast.
Thank you, Melanie. Yes, Rhaegar. And then he looks at her, Dany, and Rhaegar, thank you. Rhaegar looks at Dany and says a dragon has three heads. She's not sure if he's talking to her or the woman who's nursing.
There we go. This is the prophecy, right?
This is the part is that got me like, holy fuck, the first time I read it.
But this is, he's with Elia, right? That's Elia, and Aegon is supposedly Fagon.
No, that kid's dead. The real one's dead.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe we're jumping the gun on Elia here.
Right?
You don't think... So, John, this is...
John is... I swear to God, they better not have named him Aegon. What are you, George Foreman, Rhaegar? I mean, enough. John, this chapter is... I guess it's not the third step of a three-step Martin reveal, but it's the chapter that I was like, oh, shit. Like, that's why I'm supposed to care about this bastard at the wall. And that it clicked for me. Because right here, we have him, we have Rhaegar specifically mentioning the Song of Ice and Fire, saying that there must be one more. We learn either in this book or one of the books that Elia's second pregnancy was very difficult and that the Maesters did not believe she could survive another pregnancy, but he needed three kids. And then the last, if we skip to where is the... At some point, when she sees a blue rose growing out of a chink in ice. The only thing we've seen these blue roses being associated with is Ned's visions of Lyanna Stark, and him remembering "Promise Me, Ned." And who do we know that is associated with a big ass wall of ice? Jon Snow.
Your tinfoil is super wrapped. That is many, many stretches of tinfoil you just put on that theory. That's a lot. Because I think this is her seeing her second, Rhaegar's second son being born, like the original Aegon. I don't think this has anything to do with Jon Snow.
But it's the Song of Ice and Fire. He's the prince who was promised, and there might be one more.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're listening to this at home, you do not have the visual here. You cannot see that Melanie is holding up her copy of the book.
It's highlighted in pink.
The entire page is highlighted.
The whole page.
The entire page.
You highlighted the whole page.
It defeats the purpose to highlight every word.
I just put this page,
Rhaegar is obviously naming his kids after the conqueror, right? So Rhaenys is the oldest daughter. Aegon is the second. He needs a third. He needs the Visenya. And we do find out that Elia can't have kids. But I
think he's naming his son after Aegon the Second because Aegon the Second had such a winning personality.
I doubt that.
I just want to point. I want to get to Ken here, but I do want to point out that these rooms are designed to trick her.
Yeah.
Yes.
They are trying to lure her off the path and deceive her. So I think it's possible that the rooms themselves contain deceptive imagery.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think we should be very careful about reading too much symbolism into these scenes.
Yeah, I think this one in particular is like I don't think this is the R plus L equals J vision.
Like, really?
That they're showing.
Well, this in combination with
the only thing that this tells me is that possibly that Rhaegar didn't rape that he was trying to, like, he was trying to get another child. He didn't rape Lyanna. Like, it gives me that sense that, like, he has a mission to have a third kid. And when you find out later that Elia couldn't have that third kid, so it gives you another reason why Rhaegar might have gone outside his marriage and got an annulment. No.
He didn't need an annulment. He's a Targaryen.
I don't know if that seed for Jon Snow is in this one. I think he is referenced. I think he is referenced, like, with that ice wall. And I do think he's referenced as the treason for love and the Azor Ahai prophecy that we're going to get into later. I think he's referenced like that, but I don't know if I wasn't sold that he was the R plus L equals J is, like, in this one.
Oh, I am.
Rhaegar and Lyanna equals Jon, for anyone who doesn't know.
The Rhaegar and Lyanna equals Jon is the rose in the chink in the ice. That gives us the L part. This gives me the R part, because who is ice and who is fire? It's Jon. He's equal parts.
I don't think that that's what the flower represents.
Yeah. I think this was a stretch.
But his is the Song of Ice and Fire, and he's the prince who was promised.
I think it's very confirmed that Jon Snow is Lyanna and Rhaegar's kid.
Okay, like, good, because I don't want to hear anything about Dane chick. And
No. I do think I think it's pretty clear, right, with all the basically with how D&D even got the show. They had to guess that what all plus L equals J is. So I think it's very clear that Jon is Rhaegar's son. I just don't think that the seed was planted in the House of the Undying.
Planted a seed in my head, but that might just be because I'm insane. I don't know.
Or because that seed had already grown by the time you read it.
Ken, I would love to hear your take on this.
What? So, and I'm clearly influenced by the show here as well, as I think all of us are. But when I heard this vision and then seeing Rhaegar talking to the woman, I immediately thought it was Lyanna and I thought it was Jon Snow. And then thinking about it a little bit more, just in our discussion here, if it was Ilya Martell, right, don't the Dornish think that the power runs through the firstborn, even if it's a woman? And I think that Ilya and Rhaegar's first child is the daughter, right? Rhaenys?
Yeah, Rhaenys.
Rhaenys.
So if Rhaegar is trying to convince a person who just gave birth to a child, and it's the second child, that he's the prince that was promised, don't you think maybe the mother would kind of squash that a little bit because the older child, who's the daughter, would have the heir to the throne in the Dornish style?
Yeah, I think that's Dornish custom, but that's not like Westerosi custom, as why we have a giant civil war.
She probably accepts that.
But that's it's clear that it's the clear that it's the second child. The second child is named Aegon.
Okay.
So if he's giving birth to the second child, then that has to be Ilya.
So then
and
tell
also,
me
he wasn't there when Jon was born and Lyanna died and was in a bed full of blood, so it wouldn't be this nice conversation with a harp. It would have been a woman bleeding out.
So I'm stuck on the line that says the dragon has three heads, right?
Yeah.
So who are the three heads? Well, and is Rhaegar, this foreshadowing of a third head?
It's Rhaenys, Aegon, and Visenya, the original, the OG three.
All right, so hear me out on this
one. Dragon on their sigil has three heads. That's why he needs one more. He's got two kids. He needs one more.
Sure, sure. But can the three heads be Aegon from the from Ilya? Can it be Aegon, Jon Snow, from Lyanna?
No, don't call him Aegon.
And can it be fake Aegon from some Blackfyre woman?
Oh, no.
So he has three sons, all named Aegon. Crazy, but
I think that we should consider the possibility that Rhaegar's been trying this for a long time, and he's been spreading his seed throughout the kingdom. He's got several sets of three, or at least attempts. He's probably sired dozens of children throughout the Seven Kingdoms.
Sure.
How dare you?
How dare you
besmirch the honor of Rhaegar Targaryen?
Yes.
How dare you?
He saw Lyanna Stark and was like, holy shit, I have the ice part of my Song of Ice and Fire. Let's go, lady. And that was all it took.
He probably doesn't even know her name. No. I think you're probably right. We're probably looking at Rhaegar and Ilya Martell, and the child's probably the child that, at least in rumor,
right,
got his head smashed. Or maybe he was spirited away to Essos.
By Varys.
Oh, I would bet my life on it being Ilya Martell, because who the fuck else would it be?
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Are we ready to move to the next room?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Oh, wait. Okay. So before she gets to the next room, she gets to the end of the hallway and she turns around and she notices that the torches are going out and there's something dragging itself to her. And
it's a zombie.
She can't find a door on her right, which, of course, she's supposed to do as per her instructions. And so when she turns around, she realizes, oh, the last door on the left must be the first door on the right in this hallway.
It's the Night King.
And yet there is no Night King.
How do you know? You don't know that yet. Yeah, he could be in the, you believe in drowned ones and mermaids, but not the Night King?
I've heard those characters talked about in these pages. Oh. I've not met any head of the White Walkers yet. Wait. No, I take that back. There is a Night King. He is the bastard child of Rhaegar because he sired children all over the kingdom and beyond.
Yeah, him and Craster had a kid. Uh-huh. And that's how the Night King was born.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so the next door she goes through, she sees Piat Pri, or at least a representation of him, and he tells her to follow him, and that would mean that she does not follow the instructions of going into the right door. And then he screams at her to follow him. And one of the things that he says is that the Undying Ones will not wait forever. And this contradicts what he told her in the front of the building. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about the contradiction here.
Yeah, I mean, at the very beginning, he's like, you know, take your time, listen to all the words, write them on your heart. And then she sees this Piat Pri, and he's real anxious and jumpy, and he's trying to get her to move along. And then Dany throws the quote back, "Our lives are no more than a flicker of a moth's wing to them." Mm-hmm. And I think that's her kind of signal that, you know, something's amiss here.
Yeah, and I think that this is when I realized that these visions are false. These visions are meant to entice her. You know, here's your childhood home. You could be happy here. It could be that some rooms are intended to lure her. Some rooms are intended to scare her. But you can't trust what you see in these rooms. So that more than anything is why I keep adding these caveats. Because
I mean,
clearly this vision is intended to deceive.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that this isn't even actually Piat Pri to me. Like, when she goes away, it says, he screeched, "No, come to me," his face crumpled inward, changing to something pale and worm-like. But we see him again on outside, and he's a person, or a warlock.
And right, and in addition to that, when she sees Sir Willem... Mm-hmm. She has to remind herself that's not really him. The real Willem is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So fake Piat Pri and fake Willem. And some of these visions may use the truth to deceive, but we should be very, very cautious about theory crafting based on these visions.
Right.
I my thinking is, what's the point if you're not going to theory craft, to be honest?
You only live once.
Yeah.
Well, each room isn't the same thing. Some of them are showing, like, she sees things that have happened, things that will happen, weird representations of shit through dwarf rats, and then things that are designed to lure her in. So, like, she could be lured into seeing what she first thought is Viserys, and then, like, we know it's Rhaegar, but because she's curious. The house with the red door, that brings comfort and a feeling of safety and nostalgia. So, in some way, they're designed to keep her there, because either she can't resist being curious and wants to...
Each
watch
room has a different temptation or a different like test that she has to
except
go through.
Except for the first room, because clearly that's the only correct response to that is to run away.
Yeah. Well, hasn't everything that she sees isn't other than Piat Pri, like, you know, being all shadowy and
crumbly worm man.
Yeah, yeah. Other than that one, most of them aren't they, like, confirmed to have happened or will happen?
The only other thing she sees that I can remember that isn't and can't is what appears to be what would have been her son, Rhaegal, on a battlefield. But she sees that later when the Undying Ones are showing her.
Yeah, I'm talking about the first seven before she gets to the Undying. Mm-hmm. Are all Anthony's reason for not theory crafting here, or like kind of pouring water on the fire of theory crafting, is that these rooms are meant to deceive. However, every single one of them, besides Pyat Pri, is confirmed to either have or will happen.
Yes, no. I don't think that's necessarily right. Deceptive. I think that they're designed.
Is that not in the first? Okay. The first she sees seven house. She sees seven rooms before she walks in. I'm looking up here right now. All of them are like, if we say that one, the naked woman is her. We know that happens at the end of the chapter.
That's us projecting possible meaning onto it. And
but we, I said either
the second room is clearly a deception. She recognizes it as such. She has to tell herself, no, that's not Willem. This is the deception.
It's not meant to deceive her. It's meant to tempt her.
No, what I'm saying is that they either have happened or will happen, right? I'm not saying that that Willem was with her in Braavos. Look,
if the only thing we know about Willem is what he said in this room, then we don't know that that happened.
He's a deep one. That's the only logical conclusion we can reach, because only the deep ones are truth theory crafting based on factual evidence.
Melanie, we finally agree on something. You are exactly right.
No, this is pretty much entirely corroborated.
Holding the book up again. She's holding the book up again for a rhetorical flourish.
I am holding the book up. You woke the dragon. Show him your pages and get a different color of highlighter.
I listen to the audiobook.
I do that too, but I need this in front of me for you know.
No, I still have my copies, but they're still sealed and not opened. So
they're unsullied.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Are we ready to move beyond Pyat Pri
to the next thing that actually happens?
Okay, after going upstairs, she sees two doors, one white and one black.
What's the crap that the deep ones make that you love so much? The black stuff?
I do not think that we see the oily stone in this room. I think this vision is very clearly in reference to the House of Black and White. But I did want to point out that Danny stops and prays to the warrior. This is the third time a character has prayed to the warrior in so many pages. Tyrion did, and Catelyn did, and now Dany has done that.
Yeah, that's weird.
That actually stuck out to me, too, that she... I was like, huh, because...
Who raised her in the seven?
The seven, but she also prays to the Dothraki horse god for strength. So she is incorporating...
She's like hedging her bets.
Both the seven, which she never really practiced, but I guess she knows that that's... Like...
Yeah, maybe that was part of her education. Maybe that was part of preparing her to eventually live in Westeros again. She had to be schooled in the politics and like religion.
It's like she's facing Mecca while giving confession.
She's like me with my... Jewish dad and my Catholic mom.
So, Melanie, you pray to both the Great Stallion and the Seven-Faced God?
Mm-hmm.
I'm for the trees. I pray to the trees, man.
She calls this the Room of Wizards. And there's many people who are finely dressed. There's a woman in rose and silver.
Yeah, this is the one with the perfect boobie.
She's got the perfect breast. At least one. All we know about is one. There's a knight in emerald armor. There's a man who looks kingly. I think he might be called the Wizard King. Yep. And he's dressed in fine robes. And then there is a young man who offers to teach her the speech of dragonkind when Drogon becomes unruly. And I think that this is all bullshit. It's all bullshit. I do not think that these characters exist. I think that they're meant to deceive her. They're specifically meant to make her think that these are the Undying Ones.
Don't you realize that she's in a great hall in Valyria and they're going to teach her how to make dragons?
Don't you realize that this is the same one with the ugly booby from the next room when she was young and had a fresh booby.
Yeah, these are fake Undyne ones. They call themselves the Undyne of Karth, which is not exactly the right title. This is a facade. Yeah, it's a facade.
Right. This is just like the fresh coat of paint, right? So you have all of these same people. They even have like the really beautiful door that's entered. And then when she leaves, now the door is decrepit. And now the same people are there. Mm-hmm. But they're all, everyone has a shell. And they have a different perspective. But we're going to find out in just a couple minutes what they really are.
Look at how it comes out, right? The way I see it, it's like in the beginning, the rooms that she sees are like meant to scare her, right? You got her being ravaged, right, by the little people. And then the red wedding image of like everyone dying. The next ones are meant to deceive her, right? Are meant to like entice her, right? Like come in here, come this way, come in here. And the last two were like obvious deceptions, are meant to deceive her. So you got to scare her. Then the middle rooms are meant to entice her. And the last rooms are meant to deceive her. Bam! A House of Undying unlocked. That's how it happened.
Even if they're meant to entice her, they are not necessarily conveying truth. They could easily entice her through a deception, right?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the last two are obvious deceptions. The last two are obvious deceptions. The middle ones they aren't necessarily trying to deceive her. They're trying to entice her with something, entice her with past memories, entice her with what are the other ones? Entice her with past memories, entice her with like familial ties, like her seeing Rhaegar and stuff.
Her family
seeing
history.
Her family history. Yeah. Seeing her father. Like, I don't know. I don't necessarily think just because the last two were obvious deceptions that you can just erase the ones before, especially when we've seen them happen.
I'm just amazed at the confidence, like just the certainty that you have here.
Confidence. I've read the rest of the books. Like the rest of the books show what happens in the first couple of them.
Okay. We know that about the prophecy of the prince who is promised. We know that it's a thing in multiple cultures. We know that Rhaegar had a son named Aegon. That was his second son.
Every other Targaryen has a son named Aegon.
So if he's saying the dragon has three heads, we need one more. And also, we knew he played a harp. This person picks up a harp and starts playing it.
Who else played harp?
Maybe this was whoever taught Rhaegar how to play the harp.
Factual historical evidence to support.
Aegon has the only harp.
No, Rhaegar never existed. He's clearly a figment of Dany's imagination, and he's
All right, we know that there's a real Prat Pree, right? But in the House of the Undying, it's the fake one. In the same way that the fake Piat Pree is intended to deceive her and say false things, this could easily be a fake Rhaegar.
I don't think it's actually Rhaegar. It's a vision.
Yeah, but you trust the vision. That's my point. You trust one vision. You think that he actually said the name Aegon and said the Song of Ice and Fire and said that the dragon has three heads.
He said all that, man. He said that shit verbatim.
I'm just trying to wrap my mind around the fact that you just had your like maester class like a month or so ago called Biter is a Squisher. Based on the fact that he's ugly and gross.
Biter is a Squisher.
Yeah, this is implausible to you.
I'm going to stand behind the Biter is a Squisher thesis.
Biter is the horrifying creature.
I was hoping that this would be a lively conversation. And sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for. Are we ready to move on?
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
There is a long stone table, and above it there's a heart that's rotting but throbbing. And then around the table are several figures who are shadow-like.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that these are the real Undying Ones? Question mark.
Can't believe anything here.
The other ones called themselves the Undying Ones of Karth, which was not quite the right title.
Yeah.
But these seem to have some kind of relationship.
This one has a not so good booby.
These are the real deal, right?
Who knows? You can't believe anything.
Yeah. I wrote why next to
Okay. Here's what happens in the room. Danny is given three threes. Three fires that she has to light. She has to light one for life, one for death, and one for love. She has to mount three. Mount one to bed, one to dread, and one to love. And then she has to undergo three treasons, one for blood, one for gold, and one for love. Okay, let's start with the three fires. What is the fire she lights for life?
Drogo's funeral pyre.
Yeah, this is the birthing of the dragons. Yeah.
I think that Miri Mazdur pyre in some ways can kind of, you could take something from all of these, right? So one for life, birthing the dragons, one for death, it's killing Miri Mazdur, and one for love, it's for Drogo. So, but I think that would be, I don't know, not consequential enough that it seems like there should be three unique fires. So I'm not sure which one that the pyre.
Seems like she would have to light three distinctly different fires to make this work.
I hope she sets some more fires.
So let's assume for a minute that the Miri Mazdur murder does not satisfy every single lighting. Does anyone have an idea of maybe what else the lighting for death might symbolize?
I don't know.
She fucking burns everybody.
Yeah.
But if you're going to theorycraft, then this has to be significant, right?
I mean, is it the fire that she burns to get the Unsullied? Is it the fire that she's about to use to get out of that damn place?
I don't think we've seen the fire for death yet.
All right. That's a respectable non-answer.
She's going to use those dragons a lot.
God willing.
And along those lines, I don't think we have the one for love either. I don't think that we've met anyone from here to Marine that is significant enough to consider a fire for love.
No, I don't think so.
My theory is that the last three of each of these, so she's going to light a fire, she's going to mount, and she's going to have a treason. All the last three of these, so like a light, the fire for love, the mount for love, and the treason for love, I think are all for Jon Snow. And the Azor Ahai prophecy. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's going to light a fire for love for Jon Snow, and remember, he's gonna, if he's Azor Ahai, he's gonna have his flaming sword and stuff, and then he's gonna have to kill her. That's the treason for love, to be the actual prince that was promised, the Azor Ahai. So to end the long night, that's super tinfoil. But yeah,
okay, three mounts to bed, to dread, to love. Aside from to dread,
Drogon.
Seemingly that's Drogon, right? I don't really have an idea about these other two.
Or Mountain could be a person, like who she's going to have sex with.
Yeah, but she already has one to bed. Why would they say to dread, and that also
because when
more
she's,
sex?
Hold on. No. She's going to ride a mount to bed. That's Drogo. She's going to ride him out to Dread. That's probably Zoro, Zorindaxis. The
Duck Sauce?
Is it? No, I'm sorry. It's Homeboy.
Oh, what?
It's the guy that she marries. The guy that she marries to end the Unsullied stuff. What's his name?
Hisdar Zolorax.
Hisdar, sorry. Hisdar, right? So we got Drogo is the mount to bed. We got Hisdar is the mount to Dread. And Jon Snow is the mount for love. It's Jon Snow.
I disagree. I beg to differ. I think all of these are zoological. I think that she rides her silver to Drogo's bed on her wedding night. I think she rides the Drogon who looks like the Black Dread. And
I thought you were going to say about having sex with an animal, and I was like, the fuck, Anthony? That's sick.
And the mount for love is that she's going to fall in love with a deep one. She's gonna fall in love with Biter, who's a squisher.
And then her womb will quicken, and she will bear a living child.
And mount his amphibious body.
Oh my god.
All right, so three treasons that she has to undergo. One for blood, I think probably Miri Mazdur again. She betrayed Dany to help her people. And then one for gold. In the next chapter, she thinks that maybe that's Piat Pri, but then she realizes that the warlock wasn't actually interested in her money. And then one for love.
So can one of these treasons be, yeah, with Jorah? Because Jorah has betrayed her.
Yeah.
And she always...
I don't think so.
No?
This is where I get confused too, because I think that's a big treason plot point, but it doesn't really make sense with this group of three. Yeah, I was struggling with that one.
Yeah.
I think that Jorah had the option to betray her, but I don't think it was for money. I think it was to get home.
He did.
And I don't know that he ends up betraying her in the end.
He stops. He doesn't take his part.
Yeah, he lies, but does he
betray? And he was never doing it. Like, he wasn't doing it for love of country or love of family or for gold. It was just like, fuck, I want to get out of Essos.
Yeah.
What about Hisdar?
Fuck Hisdar. He's not important enough.
He does. He
could have set up the whole harpy thing, right? Just to get her to marry him while he stops in it. And then that's the treason. I don't know.
I have a hard time believing.
I mean, it's possible that he's getting wealthy from the fighting pits. And of course, she shuts that down.
She shuts him down.
And he marries her, but betrays her for money, basically.
But like you said, that hasn't been revealed yet.
Yeah, but I don't think she really trusts him the way she trusted. For her to think of it as like a, like she'll be pissed, but for her it to be a significant enough betrayal to her to be top three of all time.
Okay.
She sees a vision of her brother's death.
Yep.
Then she sees a warrior with copper skin and silver hair, suggesting that this is her son. Her grown son standing in front of a burning city. Again, something that absolutely cannot happen, will not happen,
We're in a different section. We're in a different section now.
Yeah, we're in a different section now.
We're in a different section.
Morrow's not yet made. Shape of shadows. Things that could have been, but will not.
She sees a dying prince with a bloody chest. Who kneels into the water as he dies and says a woman's name.
This is Rhaegar and the Trident.
Yeah, because rubies are flying off his chest.
Oh, I thought that the rubies were like the droplets of blood.
No, his breastplate.
No, it says rubies.
Yes, the three-headed dragon is made of rubies on his breastplate.
All right. Yeah, I stand corrected. Thank you.
Yeah, and he, what you call it, and Robert Baratheon hits him when he kills him, and the ruby fly into the river, and that's why that area of the trident, I think it's called the ruby.
Like drops of blood. It's not blood, it's rubies.
Thank you for the correction.
Rhaegar doesn't exist to Anthony. He's a figment of Dany's imagination.
Yeah, yeah, that's Rhaegar's death.
He is at least fake. In this chapter.
This happened, dude.
John is an immaculate
conception. This one happened. One and three happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they
did. Sorry, folks. I need about a minute to deal with dogs. I'll be right back.
All right.
He's insane.
So I guess we can, I guess we can say anything because this is going to get cut out.
He's insane. He's denying the historical fact of Rhaegar. And rubies.
Can't dispute data. That's data, right?
On the Trident.
You do. Yeah. I would say this. You are an over highlighter.
I am. But like, this is the only part of the whole book that's like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta, like, my thing is, if this all means nothing, like, what was the point of this whole fucking chapter?
I
if
don't
this means
know.
Nothing.
Anthony, like, started the whole conversation with, this exhausts me. So I feel like he kind of came in with a, not a bad attitude, but he was more down on it, where the three of us are just like, let's go. Like, we got a lot to say.
He's such a maester. Yeah, yeah. He's like, I hate dragons. I hate magic. I'm going to take points off of him.
Do what you must.
Just because
must.
I can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wait. He is going to be able to hear everything we
I
said.
I don't care.
Fuck. He's back.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
We didn't say anything while you were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I believe that about as much as I believe all these visions.
Mm-hmm. And I talked about how reasonable I find you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, notable introductions. Dany's given several new titles in this chapter. She's given the title Child of Three, Daughter of Death, and Bride of Fire. Also, we hear the title Mother for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a ton of other stuff that's introduced in this chapter, but I'm just going to focus on these titles because I thought that they were really interesting. And notable departures, I think that the House of the Undying, say goodbye to that. And maybe even the Undying ones, at least they will have to take a different form in the future. Something that I'll probably talk about in the next Dany chapter. And show differences. Basically, this entire chapter is different. There is a tower in the show. It doesn't look anything like the House of the Undying in the book. And there are a few visions in which Drogo features pretty prominently. But otherwise, this chapter is very different.
Yeah, pretty much the only thing that they have in common is that there is a House of the Undying and she goes into it.
Yeah.
And sees...
Also,
visions.
I'm sorry.
That's it.
Also, the Ironborn tell us that what is dead may never die. So I don't think the Undying are dead.
Okay, last thing I want to talk about. So before she goes into the House of the Undying, she drinks this potion, right? So she's going to hallucinate.
Yes.
But once inside, Drogon is able to see a lot of the same things that she sees. Or... at least he's connected enough to her that he's feeling what she's feeling because he actually reacts to a few of these things. And Drogon, of course, did not drink the potion. So it seems like there's been some kind of psychological link formed.
Yeah.
Or maybe their perceptions are intermingling or their feelings are intermingling.
Or they're real.
All right. All joking aside... I am very grateful to you for your time. I knew that I needed an opinionated roundtable. I thought if I bring on like a professorial type, it will not do justice to this chapter.
You need a blood mage.
So thank you for helping me with this. Did you... have a chance to take a look at the Dany chapter?
I did, yeah. I read it all, and then because I got greedy, I read the next one.
Let me just start by saying that I'm a little bit skeptical about how much can be gleaned from cryptic prophetic utterance.
Especially written in 1998, was it? 99, maybe?
right. But I was curious to get your take on this. This little prophecy has generated a lot of fan interest.
Yeah, it has. Many of which I've read over the years, but I found myself reading even more in the last 24 hours.
I don't want to go through everything she sees in the House of the Undying, but I am curious to get your take on the three threes. Three fires you must light, one for life, one for death, and one for love. Do you have any strong, do you have a strong sense of this first set of three?
Mine was, when I read that first, I associated one fire, which was confusing because it's like one for life. This is the life of her dragons. One for death, the death of
Miri Mazdur.
That's right, and one for death. So that's the one for death, and then one to love, because Drogo was also somehow kind of alive in that fire. So I kind of lumped them together as one thing. But because it's three fires, I do think that it does mean three separate ones. So I imagine the first one, one for life, is for life for dragons. One for death is possibly burning someone. I imagine the only thing that jumps to my head anyway is burning someone in a funeral pyre. But that's what immediately brought me to Drogo again, unless it's something that hasn't happened. And then one to love. I am confused. The only other possibility it has three fires you could light is that it could represent the three dragons. So, like, because there's also all kind of theories about her relationship with Drogo. Mm-hmm. So that could be like a love one. The other one, one of them lives and one of them dies. That's sort of crappy enough one, isn't it?
What about the second three? Three mounts you must ride, one to bed, one to dread, and one to love.
Okay, yeah. So this was, to me, easier to interpret, right? So one to bed, I took as to be Drogo. One to dread, I took to be Drogon. And one to love, I'm assuming, is going to be Jon Snow.
Okay, all right. Three treasons you will know. Once for blood, once for gold, and once for love.
Yeah, this is a tricky one, isn't it? Is this three treasons she will commit or three treasons that will happen to her? I think
most fans think that these are three treasons that will happen to her, but let's play both out then.
Okay, so let's go with what happened to her, because this is much easier to do, right? So once for blood is almost certainly... what's her name? Sorry again, Miri Mazdur.
Yeah, you got it, Miri Mazdur.
Because she used blood magic, right, to do whatever she tries to do. Once for gold, this is treason that will happen to her. This is Jorah Mormont, because he betrays her for gold.
Does he?
Well, I mean, why does he betray her if it's not for gold?
I think he does it because he's going to get some kind of document that allows him to come in from exile.
No, so it'll give him, he can go back to Westeros, but his whole, I suppose that is true. I was still kind of associating him with, like, needing more gold and being a little bit of a sellsword, so, yeah, maybe you're right, maybe that's not Jorah then. But anyone, considering how many people in Meereen are involved with who don't really like her and who probably betray her for gold, don't know who this might be otherwise, if it's not Jorah then, but I feel like... if it's not Jorah, so who do you think that gold one is then?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking, like, eventually the sellsword, Ben Plum, she'll surmise that he has betrayed her. And because he's a sellsword.
Yeah.
Most likely for gold or whatever. So, all right. And then one for love. Everyone wants to make that John, Jon Snow, right? So,
especially with the TV show now.
But if it is three treason she will know and it's her committing the treason, how would you read that?
Yeah, this is very tricky. So, like, potentially once for blood could be Viserys, right? So, effectively, she doesn't really betray Viserys, but... I could see how she could interpret it, his death as her fault or something like this. Then again, and I hadn't thought about this until I said it there now, but Viserys could also be one for gold, right?
Because I was thinking, like, he's actually killed literally by gold.
Yeah. Okay, so if it was once for
blood... Or maybe he betrays her? For gold?
I forgot about that one as well. Yeah, he basically did kind of sell her, right, to try and get an army.
Yeah.
And he was the only one she had protecting her.
I think that my inclination is to think that these are three treasons she will know in the sense that they will happen to her.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well. But then what also confused me about this, right, is she then asks, she says she doesn't understand, and help me, show me, and then they're like, help her, show her. But then there's all these other images, and are these supposed to be connected? So, like, then she's got the last three in the next one she sees, for example, she's got her silver trotting through the grass to a darkling stream beneath a sea of stars, a corpse at the prow of a ship, and then a blue flower grew from a chink. So are these the three treasons she will get? The first one being... So her silver is trotting through the grass, a darkling stream beneath a sea of stars. Don't get how that's related, really, unless it's something to do with Miri Mazdur again. A corpse in the prow of a ship, right? So this is likely a Greyjoy. It's on the prow of a ship. It's a corpse. So it could be because,
Isn't Euron going to propose to her, or doesn't one of the Greyjoy brothers intend to go and marry Dany and bring back her dragons and use this fancy horn to control
the dragons? It is Euron, but then he sends Victarion, right? But because, like, if you look at the last part of that, like, gray lips smiling, gray and then smiling, joy. So it's sort of a bit of a wordplay, right?
Oh, I like that. Very good. Very good.
And then the last one, a blue flower grew from a chink in a wall of ice. So because there's the only real association we have of blue flowers is with Lyanna Stark. And then the blue flower and a wall of ice kind of makes you think of Jon, who again, mostly because of season 8 of Game of Thrones, we kind of do assume loves her and also betrays her.
So right, I just want to call this out. Melanie, if you're listening, yes, indeed, Podrick has just confirmed your theory, and you win. You win. You win that argument. I just had a long conversation where I poo-pooed this blue flower as absolutely referring to Jon Snow, but you're making a good case here.
Tell me why, actually. I probably have listened to that one.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't put this one out yet, but I was thinking that the blue flower is sort of, because of where it comes in the sequence, it's sort of a general silver lining for Dream of Spring. You know, that eventually winter will die and a new vegetation will grow, something like that.
Okay, yeah.
This sort of an indication of Martin's bittersweet ending kind of thing.
Yeah, well, the air filled with sweetness at the end, yeah. But I imagine the bittersweetness is because Jon has to kill Daenerys or something like this. I don't know. But I would associate the blue flowers with Lyanna, definitely, not just because in the Tower of Joy, but also I think in the crypts, don't they have blue flowers around her? And then a chink in a wall of ice, that sort of makes you, not only does the wall of ice make me think of the wall, but a chink in it, arguably Jon could have caused like a chink in the wall or be responsible for its destruction somehow, possibly bring all the wildlings through or something like this. So
yeah, I mean, I guess it, metaphorically, he kind of does crack the forever wall between cultures. Yeah.
So then if that section is them showing her, elaborating on the previous three sets of three, then the previous three are the glowing like sunset, a red sword raised in the hand of a blue-eyed king who casts no shadow. So this has to be Stannis, right? A king who casts no shadow. He gave the shadow to kill Renly.
I mean, I don't know if it has to be Stannis. It seems like, I mean, Stannis was clearly not the prince who was promised. So it could be that Melisandre does her little trick with multiple people.
Mm.
And, you know, this is a classic thing to, like, throw you off. Well, surely it has to be Stannis, but eventually Melisandre is going to throw her weight behind someone else who she calls the princess's promise. So I don't know.
I should also point out, if I got the order wrong there, if I do tie this to the previous paragraph, these three come in connection to three mounts you must ride, because that's after the three treasons you will know. Or it's before three treasons you will know. In which case, yeah, maybe they're not connected. It's hard to know if they show her and then they do show her, or if it's just an unconnected set of things. I kind of... because they before just after that, then they go Slayer of Lies. So that's why another reason why I would have assumed that was Stannis, because he's not Azor Ahai, and then she's the slayer of that lie that he is.
Oh, interesting.
But as you say, there's so many ways to interpret this, and I do think Martin, like, likes to leave himself a lot of room so that, like, if he changes something or even massively changes something, he can always get out of it because there's so many interpretations. And also because he doesn't, like, set everything in stone. I can imagine when he wrote this, he hadn't conceived, like, Dany marrying Hisdar. And even he definitely hadn't conceived how long she was going to spend in Essos. So there's already been changes. And then this corpse at the prow of a ship, I would imagine Victarion wasn't supposed to be going to Daenerys originally. I imagine it was supposed to be Euron. So I do think we should be careful making very literal interpretations of these, because for all we know, by the time he writes Winds of Winter, like 30 years after he wrote this, you know, he might have changed his mind or come up with new ideas, you know, even if it is a very fun exercise.
It's a fun exercise, and it is one that it seems like if you're going to read this chapter, you at least need to do a little bit of mental gymnastics. Just to do justice by the chapter, I guess.